Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mailer here, and it may seem like April 17th is a long way off, but you know what's going to be here before you know it, and it's tax time. Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals back with us today. She and her husband David have been in the tax business for more than 30 years. They serve individuals, they consult tax professionals or give consulting to tax professionals. They teach tax seminars around the country. She always has great advice and information for us. So, you have some tax questions? I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can post a question on our Facebook page, and again, email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Mary Mellum, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you with us. I bet you're a very busy person these days with the new tax act.
Well, there's lots of questions going on.
I guess. Will the changes affect how we file our 2017 taxes?
No. There are only a couple of things that affect 2017, and they're not major things. The lowering of the percentage of medical base that you have to get over went back to 7.5% from the 10% that it was raised to, and that affects 2017. So that's good for people with medical deductions. And there are some changes with the bonus depreciation that affects business people. But those are really the only two things that affect 2017. Most everything is 2018 affected.
What do you think the changes that will have the most effect on the average taxpayer will be?
I think on the average taxpayer, the rates are being reduced, which is a good thing. The personal exemptions are going away. Itemized deductions are going to be more difficult to itemize because the standard deduction is so much greater. So people who are kind of on the edge of itemizing may not itemize. They may be ahead of the game because they get a bigger standard deduction. But the big thing is that each person is going to be on their own as far as how it affects them. There are some things that are going to be lowered for them. There are some things that are going to be raised, and where they fit into it depends on their own personal situation.
I think one of the big things that a lot of people have talked about is the deduction for the standard, the itemized deductions with state and local taxes and in state income taxes only amounting to $10,000 in the coming year.
For us in the state of Wisconsin, it's not as big of an issue as it is for people on the coasts. For people in New York, their property taxes are 2.5 times that on a normal basis. And so they're very upset about the change because it did cause a lot of problems for them. For us in Wisconsin, not quite so much. It's certainly going to hurt some people, especially your higher income people with the big withholding, or someone that lives in a high property tax area. The combination is going to affect it. But general, you know, on the general basis, it's not as big an effect. For some of the people who are itemizing or will continue to itemize, one of the other things that's going to affect them is the change in not being able to deduct home equity interest. And it's going to be, for some people who have refinanced their houses and taken out money to do other things with it, to track back to the amount of interest that is really deductible is going to be a challenge.
Oh, yeah. That's something to start on, I think, earlier rather than later for 2018, for your 2018 taxes, for sure. Well, Patricia in Madison has a question for you, so let's go there. Patricia, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Aloha, Larry. I guess I would like a clarification of the QCDs, the Qualified Charitable Distributions. My understanding is that when you take that QCD out of your required minimum distribution from your IRA, that it is a way to reduce one's taxable income, but then you cannot use it as a deduction as a charitable contribution. Am I correct in that?
You are correct in that. And that if you were to be able to use it as a charitable deduction, you would be double dipping.
Okay.
And that is not allowed. The benefit of the qualified charitable distribution is to lower your adjusted gross income, and your adjusted gross income is the basis for other things. And if you lower that, then the offsetting deduction goes away as well. But you're lowering it, so maybe not as much of your Social Security becomes taxable. If you have rental property, maybe more of the losses are allowed by having a lower AGI. Or medical expenses are freed up that way. So it is a good thing if you are going to do the charity. It certainly, you know, it certainly helps you tax-wise. And with itemized deductions going away, for 2018, I think it's going to be even greater tax advantage.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Dan in Wind Lake, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning, Mary and Larry. Thanks for the program, Larry.
Sure.
The question I have is that we had a home, or I should say up in our northern Wisconsin, and we own it, pay the property taxes and so on. And now we had to come down closer to our children for health reasons, and we are renting. Is there any way that I can take the property tax partial or all for 17?
For the rental property or for the
property? No, for the home, right, up in northern Wisconsin.
Do you still own the home in northern Wisconsin?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Your property taxes would continue to be deductible on as an itemized deduction on federal, and the portion of the property taxes that reflect the time that you lived in the house as your principal residence would also qualify for the credit on the Wisconsin return.
Okay. So up until June, let's say, from January to June, those would be deductible in Wisconsin, where
paid in this year would be allowed for the Wisconsin.
Yep. All right, Dan, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. So you get about 6 months worth there. Let's take some more calls. By the way, we have open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Now to George in Madison. Hi, George.
Yeah, hi there. I have a question about purchasing a home from our parents. My wife and I are looking at purchasing from her parents, and we're wondering if there is a better way to go about it for tax breaks or if we just have to purchase it as a normal home.
Purchasing your home, are you getting any special benefit by purchasing it from your parents? Is it below fair market value, anything like that?
No, it's going to be about fair market value.
Are the parents holding the financing?
No, we were going to go through just a regular mortgage lender unless there was an advantage.
No. Well, the only advantage is if mom and dad were to hold the mortgage, maybe they'd be willing to charge you a little bit less interest rate for it, and you would pay them directly. But as long as you set it up, it would be something similar to a land contract. That's the only tax advantage that I could see. If, you know, if they wanted the money over time rather than all at once, you could be spreading the interest for them and giving them interest maybe more than they'd be making at the bank. So that would be an advantage there if you set it up as a land contract.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls. Let's go to Katie in Stoddard next. Hi, Katie.
Hey there, Larry. Hey, I keep hearing about the itemized deductions, and I run a small business, and so my itemized deduction list is huge when it comes to fees I have to pay and all the materials and raw materials and supplies, and that's huge for my tax health. Is that going to change at all?
Okay, first of all, I think if you're talking business and itemized deductions, you're intertwining two different tax concepts. If you're in business, generally you would file, I assume you own the business?
Yeah.
Then you would file generally a Schedule C, and your deductions against that business all go against your Schedule C. That's not an itemized deduction. Itemized deductions are the deductions that you take personally, like your property taxes, your mortgage interest, your charities, your medical expenses, and then another category called miscellaneous. So for you, things as far as your business should not change.
Okay. All right. That was my big hang up. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Kay in Prairie du Chien next. Hi, Kay.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just filed a homestead credit, the easy, just a real quick, and I had taken out a small short-term loan to pay, say, like, you know, part of my real estate taxes, and I got a letter from the bank. I don't know how I'm going to do this. It says not reported loan interest, notice of loan interest not reported to the IRS, keep for tax purposes. And the loan amount interest that I paid was $2.14. Do I have to do the long file thing? The long term? Or
no.
Or can I just do the homestead easy credit?
Your homestead credit is all you need to do. That the bank notified you of that loan interest. If the loan is non-deductible unless it was used for business purposes, and since you don't file, the $2 makes no difference. That was interest you paid, not interest paid to you. If it were interest paid to you, you would have had to include it with your homestead claims. So for you, you don't have to worry about it at all.
Okay, because I never received one of these before this, and I thought $2.14, and I got to go through all of that.
So,
but anyway, I sure thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Talking today with Mary Mellum, tax professional. She and her husband, Dave, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals and are enrolled agents. They serve individuals, they consult other tax professionals, and they teach tax seminars around the country. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your taxes today with Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us. Open line at 800-642-1234 so you can join in with your question. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Tony on Facebook says his father-in-law decided to help them by paying off their mortgage. He wrote a check to the credit union for $25,000 that paid off the mortgage. Is Tony liable for the taxes on that sum?
The only way that Tony would be liable for taxes on $25,000 is if Tony's father-in-law paid the $25,000 in exchange for some services that Tony or his family provided for him. I suspect that Tony's father-in-law either gave them the money as a gift or loaned them the money, in which case he would expect repayment. So it's not, chances are it's not a taxable event. Tony's dad on the other side, they have a gift tax situation. The amount of gift that can be given to any one person without creating a gift tax return is $14,000. If he gave the gift to both Tony and his wife, there is no tax consequences either to dad or to Tony for that. So depends on how the payment, what the meaning of the payment was.
Gotcha. Wayne in Marshfield has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning. Over the past years, there's been an extra exemption for blindness. And for the last number of years, we've done the short form. And now, under the new tax policy, would that make any difference, or is that gone? Did I understand Mary to say that exemption?
The exemption for blindness still exists for 2018. They did not take it away. So the standard deduction has increased, but it will increase for you additionally because of the age and blindness.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And let's turn next to Sam in Cambridge. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
So I have a question. I own a business, and I offer consulting services. I recently got an international client, and I'm wondering if I will get taxed differently for consulting for a domestic or an international client.
If you are performing the services in the United States, you will pay taxes on the income you receive from the foreign client in the same way that you pay on any domestic income. If you travel abroad to do that service for them, the foreign country may tax you on the income as well, and then that would cause an opportunity for a foreign tax credit or foreign tax exemption, possibly on the United States. So it depends on how it plays out.
Mm-hmm. Nice, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And on to Jordan in Grafton next. Jordan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, guys. So 2017 here, my employer they put $700 beyond what was supposed to be put into an HSA account. And I contacted the folks from HSA, and what they did was they sent an electronic deposit into my bank account for $700. And I'm wondering what the penalty will be for that on my taxes this year.
If you correct it, if the employer corrects it and takes it back out right away and adjusts your, was it an employer contribution or one that was withheld out of your wages, i.e. you made it?
It was withheld from my wages.
Okay, then the employer needs to take it back and or possibly credit it to a 2018 account. And before they do your W-2s, they should adjust your W-2 so that much wasn't taken out of your W-2. So it needs to be corrected, and it can be without causing additional problems if it's done, if it's taken back out or dated to the 2018 year.
And if it's not, do you know what the penalty would be?
If it's an excess contribution, there is a 10% penalty, I believe, for an excess contribution. And I would strongly suggest that you change, you know, go down and have them changed. Why pay the money for excess when you can fix it without causing any tax?
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan, for calling. And let's turn next to Larry in Three Lakes, Wisconsin. Hi, Larry.
Hi. My question is, can I make a charitable contribution from my IRA and have it reduce my income level, even though it's not a required minimum distribution?
Larry, I'm going to be bold and ask how old you are.
65.
The answer is no. That particular tax law was set up to benefit people who are 70 and a half or older.
Okay. I was afraid of that.
If you were taking money out, it would be taxable to you, and the charitable contribution would come through on the Schedule A. So it's not going to do quite the same thing because you're not old enough yet.
Okay.
There you go, Larry.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Hang in there another 6 years and 6.5 years, and you'll be able to do that. Ann in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I have a question with these new tax enhancements. Does this apply to, will I see fewer deductions for my Social Security monthly check or my monthly pension? Or is it just for wages earned?
That's a good question, and enhancements is a very interesting word that you used. Some people would agree with you.
I used it as an enhancement, I thought, for those who are still working, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it addressed anywhere.
The withholding tables are being changed to reflect the lower tax rates. The lower tax or the withholding tables are used both by earned people, people receiving earned income, or people having withholding taken out of pension checks or even anything that's taking withholding out, it could affect those.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling, Ann. And let's go to Jim in Waukesha next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about use of a withdrawal from a 529 plan for K through 12 private school tuition. I understand there were some changes in the law, and I'm not sure how that applies in our state.
For the year 2018, that's when that begins. The 529 plans will be changed to allow money to come out of a 529 plan to pay for elementary or secondary education. In the past, the 529 plans were only allowed to be used for post-secondary education. There was a 530 plan that could be set up to pay for secondary and elementary education. So for 2018, there is a max of $10,000 per student per year that can be taken out of a 529 plan. And as far as Wisconsin...
Okay.
I shouldn't affect Wisconsin any differently than anyone else because it's federal law, unless Wisconsin chooses not to go along with that, which Wisconsin has not come out with their laws for 2018 yet. So we'll see how they decide to either accept or reject the federal changes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. So you're thinking about college funds and tuitions and so forth. $10,000 may not be enough to cover for some people.
The $10,000 limit is only for the amount to take out for secondary and for elementary school.
Okay.
For college, you can take out whatever you want.
I gotcha. Okay, thank you. And let's take... let's go to Nancy in Grafton. Nancy, hi, thanks for calling.
Oh, good morning. My husband died in July, and I guess we're having a joint return this year. But anyway, what about all those funeral expenses? Are those things deductible, or do you have to just say, have to cough it up?
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, my sympathy for losing your husband. As far as the filing of your return, you're exactly right. In the year of death, the tax return looks very much like it did the year before. Unfortunately, the funeral expenses have no impact on the personal return. And so the only time the funeral expenses come into play is if you're forced to file an estate valuation return. It's a Form 706. And for people currently, it's about $5 million of assets that they would have before they'd have to file that return. So most people have no benefit from the funeral expenses.
Oh, I guess that's the way it goes.
Yeah,
unfortunately, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for your loss, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Let's turn to John in Minocqua next. John, hello. Thank you for calling.
Well, hello, Larry. Great show. Here's my situation. The company I was working for was a dual proprietorship, and it was an SBA Fertile Hub Zone certified business. The one that was supposed to be paying the bills wasn't doing it, so the other owner started a new company, informed the other old owner what was going on, and everybody transferred over to this company, the new company. We were told our first few paychecks in 2017, 2018, they wouldn't be deducting the taxes. They didn't have everything set up yet. They were going to be sending us a 1099 form. I am trying to determine what it is that I need to do to make sure I pay my fair share.
Oh, boy. First of all, a 1099 that they're talking about treats you as an independent contractor. That basically means that you are in business providing services to this new company. Has anything changed in the way that you go to work or do your job compared to what you did with the old company?
No, it was a total, just complete change. We're doing the exact same thing, exact same kind of work, exact same process. Everything is just totally different.
Okay. So if you were an employee before, chances are you are an employee now. Now, the companies who treat people as independent contractors when they're really employees can get themselves into big trouble. And that's a company thing. That's not a you thing. If it were not this situation, as an independent contractor, you would file a Schedule C. You would take any expenses that you had in doing your business against it, and you would pay taxes on the income that's left, and you would also pay full Social Security, both the employer half and the employee half, which is 15.3%, basically. So you're in a touchy situation. That's all I can
say. I'm a field service engineer, so they're still paying out. I'm handing in my expenses, and they're still paying, reimbursing me for expenses like mileage or whatever.
And a reimbursement policy is fine. You know, as far as if they have an accountable plan and have a reimbursement policy, that's fine. It's as if they're paying it. And whatever they give you in wages that they haven't taken off the Social Security and Medicare tax, technically you're responsible for it on your own tax return. It's just because of the way they're doing it, it appears that it's kind of an icky situation. All I can say is stay tuned.
Yeah.
I'll definitely have to be paying the 15.3 and perhaps any state or federal tax against that. Is that correct?
Yes. If you are truly an independent contractor, and I use that term loosely in your situation, but if you're truly an independent contractor, then you are liable to pay in your own taxes. And most people who are independent contractors pay estimated tax payments to the federal and the state, and the federal estimate would also include the Social Security and Medicare tax as well as withholding tax.
Okay. See, we weren't told any of that. They're just that they're going to send us these forms, and we're going to take care of it. Because we're not independent contractors, we're employed by these people. That's the whole thing. Oh.
See, that's where the touchy situation comes in. If they are reporting your wages on a 1099 miscellaneous, they are treating you as independent contractors.
Wow.
As independent contractor, a business does not have to pay unemployment compensation and things like that. And some employers we'll do that as a way of avoiding paperwork and taxes and things like that. Wisconsin has a law that says if we in Wisconsin, as in the Department of Revenue, finds a business that is in the construction area that is treating people as independent contractors when they really should be employees, there is a $25,000 per employee fine that Wisconsin can assess on Wisconsin businesses. So as I say, that's a touchy situation that your new company is getting involved, and I hope they have some good advice.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to talk to them about it because nothing's changed. We're working for the same indirect contract to an organization, so I'm going to have to get in contact with them and find out exactly what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
That the owner that was supposed to be paying the bills was paying them later, not paying them, and we lost credit rating, and so the other owner set this all up and then notified the new owner. We all resigned and went under his employment, and it's actually a national business, so it's not just the state of Wisconsin. It's all across the U.S.
Oh. Yeah. Well, there is a difference, truly, between being an employee and being an independent contractor.
Definitely. John, good luck. You need to have that conversation probably sooner than later. At least I would anyway, I'm pretty sure. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Ann in Stevens Point, we turn to you next. Ann, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My husband and I have always filed a joint return. But now with the new tax laws, I'm wondering if we would pay for us to file separately.
Well, Ann, do you live in the state of Wisconsin?
Pardon?
Do you live in the state of Wisconsin?
Yes.
Wisconsin is a marital property state, which is community property in a varied way, which says that everything you earn belongs half to your husband, everything that he earns belongs half to you, and so that would mean taking the whole pool of income and splitting it in two and putting those things on the married separate return. In many cases, there is no benefit to do that, and in certain cases, there are things that married separate returns can't do that others can do. I, not knowing all of your situation, could not give you that idea, but if you're thinking about that, find a tax professional to sit down with and do the tax return both ways and see which comes out.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is that my husband has very large medical bills last year, and we assume they will continue through the rest of his lifetime. I have very few deductions. And so to take advantage of the larger general deduction, I'm thinking maybe we should file separately, and I would take the minimum deduction, and he would have more of the medical expenses to deduct above 7.5%. Is that not correct?
Wisconsin is one step ahead of you, or federal is, the tax law is one step ahead of you. On a married separate return, whoever itemizes forces the other person to itemize. So you play the game you're suggesting. The only way that you could do that is if you get a divorce and live together.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Is it true that would it make any difference if, let's say, one person was making $200,000 a year and the other spouse is making $50,000 a year, so there's quite a difference in income? Would that have any impact?
It depends on the situation. If there is a community property and there is no premarital agreement that says mine is mine and yours is yours, each return would report $125,000.
Gotcha.
On each return.
Yeah.
And the situation would apply that way. If they entered into a premarital agreement and I kept mine and you kept yours, it's still a married separate return, so we can't have one itemizing and one using the standard deduction, but it could possibly change the way things fall.
Okay.
But again, if there are children or college expenses, there are some things that you can't do on a married separate return that you could do on a joint return. So it's something that it may work out in certain circumstances, but it's certainly not an across-the-board answer.
Let's turn to Tyler next in Milwaukee. Tyler, hello.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just started a new job at the beginning of last year. I work as a mechanic, and I've been just out of school, been purchasing a bunch of tools. I've probably spent about $12,000 over the last year, and that is paid up money for tools. Now my employer does offer tool pay. I get $75 per paycheck. We get paid twice a week, but that did not kick in until May, as I was still a new employee. My question is whether or not I can claim the tool expenses that I've paid into on my taxes.
Well, Tyler, you started your business at the right time. And I say that because as an employee, the tools that you buy would be employee business expenses. You could make an election to expense those tools, which would mean write them off in full in the year that you have purchased and placed them in service. So you could take a deduction for the $12,000 minus the amount that you're reimbursed by your employer. So the $75 times however many times, that taken away from the $12,000 is a deduction that you can take for 2017. Now, I say that you started at the right time because in 2018, the law changed to prevent people from taking employee business expenses on the Schedule A. So if you're going to do it, this is the year to do it.
Okay, so I can do it for this year, but after this year, the law is changing, and any further tools I purchase outside of that account that they
give if you are still an employee, there will be no deduction for them.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess it's a good thing I got hired when I did.
Good enough. Thanks, Tyler. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls. Visiting today with Mary Mellum, tax professional. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at your taxes with Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. Call at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. Phil emailed to say his mom is planning on selling her condo in the next year or two. Is it true that she can deduct expenses for home improvements completed in the year before the sale? Are there restrictions on that?
Okay, the answer to that question, I'm assuming when mom is selling her condo, that her condo is her principal residence. If it is her principal residence, the improvements go into what we call the cost basis or the cost that she has paid over time for that property. The selling price minus the cost is what she would be taxed on, except that if it's her principal residence, she's able to exclude up to $250,000 of that gain. So if it is her principal residence, yes, she doesn't get a deduction for them. It's part of her accumulated cost, but she's not going to pay taxes on the sale generally anyway. If this condo is a second home, it's important to have those to reduce the potential gain that she has that she will pay taxes on. And if it is a rental property that she has, if the condo were a rental property, some of the expenses would be currently deductible as she paid for them. Some of them she would depreciate, depending, again, on what the nature of the improvement was.
Gotcha. Art in Eau Claire has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Art.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call and to your guest. I just have a question. Is the new tax law that just passed, does that take effect in 2018 or is it 2017? And it's almost time to get my taxes done, and I don't want to go to my tax man and hand him all my deductions and have him say, well, you don't have enough to qualify, but here's a bill for looking at your taxes when I could have done them at home if the standard deduction doubled for 2017. So that's my question.
Mm-hmm. Well, Art, I'm going to answer this as a tax professional. First of all, the answer to your question is that most of the changes will take effect in 2018 and forward, not 2017. What is going to happen with us as tax professionals this year is our clients are going to come to us with the things that they have had for this year, and most of them are going to expect us as tax professionals to give them an idea of what's going to happen for 2018. So I strongly suggest that if you are dealing with a tax professional, that you go see that person this year with everything that you would normally go to see them with, because I think they'll have a lot to tell you for next year.
There we go. Thank you so much, Art, for calling. And on to Lou in Oconomowoc. Hi, Lou. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I appreciate the time you're giving it. This is really helpful. I had a question in regards to a second property we own.
Yeah.
And we just purchased the house last year, 2017. And I had read somewhere where I'm doing all the work myself, but it's been I'm driving back and forth doing it every other weekend because my wife won't let me get away any further. But in the process, I had read something somewhere where you can deduct up to $7,000 a year for work done in the house. I'm not sure. I read it on Forbes and another site on the Internet. And I was just wondering what your gal there might be able to, how she could fill me in on expenses incurred that way.
First of all, Lou, my question is, what's your intent with this second property?
Eventually to move up there at one time. Yeah, up there. Yeah.
But are you using it right now as a second home, a vacation property?
No, it isn't a vacation property. It's a project. My wife hasn't even been up there.
Okay. So it isn't, the project isn't to create a property to rent to other people. Is that true?
No, I couldn't have rent that right now. Nope.
Okay. For this second property, everything that you put into it in terms of things that you purchase will be part of your cost of the property. I don't know where the $7,000 comes from, because there is no magic $7,000 that you automatically get. You will not get any benefit for the labor that you have used for you to do that. And since you're not in business, the drive up there is personal also, so that's technically a non-deductible issue with it. So it's the lumber and the supplies and things like that that you put into that property that is going to give you more cost in that property.
Sure. Well, materials anyway. Well, that'd be fine. You know,
Just keep good records. Every time you go to the hardware store and buy nails and things like that, keep your receipts.
Well, I have been. I used to be a contractor, so I know all about it.
All right, Lou, thanks. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate the call. And Mark in Green Bay is up next. Mark, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I collect Social Security disability. And I was told when I first got on it that I didn't have to file taxes or something. Am I supposed to be paying taxes or something?
Mark, if you're main source of income is the Social Security or the disability, and you don't have a lot of investment income and things like that, you'll probably never need to file a tax return again.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. And on to Ralph in Sturgeon Bay area. Let's see. There you go. Ralph, hi.
Hi, good day to you both. Quick question. I have a friend that I help who's disabled, and he inherited last year about 25 acres of farmland from his grandfather's death. He sold it just after the first of the year. Are the proceeds from that sale taxable?
Okay. It is your friend that inherited the 25 acres of land?
That is correct.
Okay. At the time your friend's grandfather died, that land had a value. Whatever that value is compared to the sale price of the land, the difference between the two, if it's positive, is a taxable event. That together with his other situation, you know, with his other reflections, will tell whether he has to pay a tax or not.
Right. Fortunately, there was an existing appraisal of the land that happened because they were going to sell it to care for the grandfather's nursing home expenses. So there is an appraisal. The land sold for a little bit more than the appraisal. So it is the difference that's taxable. Do I understand correctly?
That is correctly. That is, there could be a few other factors in there, like selling costs or things like that, that might reduce that gain. But pretty much what you said is what he needs to have to properly reflect the gain.
Terrific. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling, Ralph. Nick, and it's kind of along the lines of that, Nick in Milwaukee emailed to ask if there are any important tax changes coming for those on disability and or Medicare.
Basically, the tax rate changes and the standard deduction affect everybody. There isn't anything that I can specifically think of that was targeted at disabled or retired people specifically.
Okay. Gloria in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. I have a question about when EE bonds become due. Say you have a number of them. Do you have to cash them in the same year that they become due? Or could you hold on to them? I realize there's no interest after 30 years, but can you hold on to them and then cash them in, say, yearly instead of all at once?
Technically, what is supposed to happen when you hold those bonds to their final maturity, where they stop earning interest?
Yes.
Technically, that interest is taxable at that point in time. So whether you cash them in or not, you should have included that interest in your income the year that they mature.
Okay. So, and what happens if you wait a year and you pay the tax the next year? Is there a penalty then?
It is technically taxable the year before that.
Right.
If you were audited, they could make you change it. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Okay. So for anything that becomes due or doesn't pay interest anymore, you're supposed to put that interest down that year.
Yes. The year that they mature, you're supposed to treat it as if you received the income all of that year.
Okay.
All right.
Got it. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Gloria. Appreciate the call. And let's see. With Jerry in Tony, Wisconsin. We're on to you now. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Say, listen, it's cold up here, but I had a quick question on those people who got the $1,000 bonus after this tax plan went through, like most radio announcers. and myself, received that check. Of course, there was a gross check, and then there was the money taken out. And what if somebody got that $1,000 bonus in 2 months? What would be the difference in between gross and net on that total?
I guess I'm not exactly sure what you're asking.
Okay. If I got, because of the $1,000 bonus check you'd get, you'd still have to take out, they would take out for Social Security and stuff. Is that correct?
Yes. The bonus check is for earnings, correct?
Right.
And I understand you correctly. You're saying that I got part of it in 2017 and part of it in 2018?
Well, let's say that, but let's say you got 1,000 in 2017 and 1,000 in 2018. What would be the difference in your actual net that you'd take, that you could put in the bank?
There are new withholding tables that are coming out. The Social Security and Medicare did not change. So the only thing that would have changed is the amount of withholding on your specific level, whether you're claiming zero or single, zero and single, or one and single, whatever, or married, whatever that rate is, the withholding tables for 2018 did go down.
So there we go. We'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with Mary. Stay with us. Taking a look at your taxes today here on the Ideas Network, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Been in business for a long time with her husband, David. They operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. They're enrolled agents, serve individuals. They consult to other tax professionals and teach tax seminars around the country. So it's great to have them with us. And certainly if you have questions, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. And let's turn to Dan in Milwaukee next. Dan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking the call. So my question is this. I'm a military reservist in the Air Force. I live in Milwaukee, but I'm stationed in North Dakota, pretty far away. The government gives me, I think, up to $300 can be reimbursed basically for my travel a year for those trips. And sometimes I have to make multiple trips back and forth, which you can imagine they add up. And they far exceed $300 worth of gas and mileage and stuff like that. I'm wondering, with the new tax law, am I going to be able to deduct any of that, or what's going to happen? Because we've heard a lot about how the president wants to benefit the military, and kind of a little bit worried. So what can you tell me?
What I can tell you is that as a reservist, you're considered an employee of the federal government, and for 2018, employee business expenses have gone away. There was a special adjustment for reservists on as an adjustment to the tax to the front page of the return. And to the best of my knowledge, I have not seen anything as to whether that adjustment on the front page is gone. So I haven't seen it addressed. And if it's still there, you'll get it, but you won't get it as an itemized deduction if it goes away.
There you go.
Okay. Stay tuned.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for the info.
Yep, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Jerry emailed to ask what the standard deduction for married couples 65 and over will be.
The standard deduction for married couples for 2017 or 2018? I'm not sure which one he's asking about.
Yeah, well, do you have them for both?
The standard deduction for 2017 for a married couple is $12,700, and there is an additional amount of $1,250 per person that is over the age of 65. So for 2017,
that standard deduction, if both people are over 65, their standard deduction would be $18,438. Couldn't come up with that number. Now, it will be $15,200 for 2017. In 2018, the blindness and age still exists, and it's, if it stays at the same number, their standard deduction will increase to $26,500.
There we go.
Now, I just want to say something because we just did a $15,000 compared to a $26,000, but that's not exactly apples to apples because next year you won't have a personal exemption. So the personal exemption amount is $4,050, which will go away. So for next year, the $15,700 that I first came up with is really compared to $18,400 as far as value. It's gone up, but it's not going to give you the difference between $15,000 or $18,000 and $25,000.
Gotcha. Let's go to Gina in Oshkosh next. Gina, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What can we do for you?
Well, my father purchased a condo and put my name on it and sold it less than a year later, and I had to sign a 1099, so I'm concerned about taxes this year.
And that if your father made money on the condo, then you should be concerned. Do you have any idea whether there was a profit?
It was basically an even sale. He only kept it for like 9 months.
Okay. If it was an even sale and you had to sign as an owner of the condo, then you should not have any tax effect other than having to report the sale. So you would be reporting the sales proceeds. You would get whatever your share of it was, whether you were considered a half owner, whatever. You would report your share of the cost basis as well as your share of the selling expenses. And if it was a wash, it should be a wash on your tax return as well.
Excellent. Can I ask you one more thing?
Sure.
I gave that money directly back to my father because I had no part of this sale, really. Is he going to have tax implications because I signed a check over to him for $70,000, I think it was?
Oh, okay.
I really had no part of this at all other than my name was on it.
Technically, I'm sure your father was looking further in putting your name on it. It was looking to help out if something happened to him or some other idea beside the tax side of it.
You are correct.
As far as what technically happened is, when your father put your name on that property, he gifted you that piece of property, that much of it. When you gave the money back to him, you technically gifted him the money back. Because the cash that you gifted back to him was more than $14,000, you should technically be sending in a gift tax return showing the gift of that $70,000. He, when he put your name on the property, should have done a 709 form showing your name as the recipient of the gift. So there should have been a 709 or should be a 709 form filed to reflect the gift. There is no tax consequences of that gift.
Okay, so I assume our tax preparers this year will have us fill out those forms when we prepare our taxes?
Just make sure that you tell them that what you told me, if you tell them that, they should know to do the 709 forms.
Well, thank you so much. You've taken some weight off my shoulders. I've been worried about this all year.
Okay, Gina. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, boy. Jeff in Altoona, Pennsylvania, I believe. Is that correct?
That is correct, Larry. And good afternoon to you and Mary.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
I have my wife and I just relocated from Wisconsin in 2017. And so we're going to have income in both states, and that'll be one of my questions. However, she had no income in Wisconsin for 2017, and I have had no income in Pennsylvania in 2017. So how do the two states resolve our tax burden?
When you file returns, I'm assuming, well, let me ask this. Were both of you residents of Wisconsin for part of the year, and both of you residents of Pennsylvania for part of the year?
Yes. My wife was a resident of Wisconsin for 5 months, 7 months in Pennsylvania, and I was 7 months in Wisconsin, 5 months in Pennsylvania.
Okay. In both places, and I don't know exactly the rules for Pennsylvania, as far as if they require you to do a joint return, if you do a joint federal return. Most people, if they normally file a federal return, will file a joint return. If they file a joint federal, they'll file a joint return for the state, and they'll allocate the income for the state of Wisconsin. If all of your income was earned as a resident, you'll file a part year return, and you'll be taxed on that portion of your income earned in Wisconsin compared to your total income. Pennsylvania should do the same with that.
Okay, so basically I'll pay the Wisconsin taxes for the Wisconsin income. We will, I should say. My wife and I will pay Wisconsin taxes for the Wisconsin income, Pennsylvania taxes for the Pennsylvania income.
That is correct.
Okay. And then one other question as well, too. We still have a home in Wisconsin that is on the market to be sold. One of your previous callers, it sounded like as far as the deductions on my state and local taxes for the home, are the only taxes I can apply would be those taxes for those months that I lived in the home.
No, that's not exactly. If you're talking about the federal return, your property taxes that you pay on the Wisconsin property as well as the Pennsylvania property, if you own one in Pennsylvania, would be deductible on your federal return.
Okay.
For Wisconsin, Wisconsin has an itemized deduction. Well, Wisconsin is not going to give you anything for property tax deduction except the property tax credit. And the property tax credit would only include the months that you lived here on that property. So you would have to allocate because it would no longer be your principal residence. So for the time it was your principal residence, the 7 months, you would be able to take that much of the property taxes for that time period.
Okay.
All right.
Well, very good. I do appreciate the answer.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling. And Clint in Ladysmith, your turn. Hi, Clint.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Last year, the year before, I took a job doing technical sales, and I am paid on a base salary plus commission. Now, in the middle of 2017, my commission kicked in. The first year was straight salary just to see if I liked sales. And my question is, are my expenses are paid 75% by my employer. I cover 25% out of my commission. Is that 25% tax deductible?
Since you are an employee of the company, the 25% that you have to pay would be considered an employee business expense. Employee business expenses are deductible right now for 2017 as an itemized deduction, a miscellaneous 2% itemized deduction. So if you can itemize, that's how you would recover the 25%. In 2018, miscellaneous itemized deductions will not be deductible. Therefore, you're out for that as far as a tax benefit.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much, Clint, for calling. And on to Jim in Cleveland. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Thanks for this very informative show. The question I have is that I work for a nonprofit organization that normally would pay for my insurance benefits, but they didn't have the money to pay for the last two quarters. So I made a large contribution for those two quarters from my own money. Would that be considered a charitable contribution that's tax deductible? Or am I receiving a service for that contribution?
Okay. Let me ask a couple of questions. You work for the nonprofit as an employee. Is that correct?
Yes, but the taxes I pay are considered self-employed.
Okay. So you contract with them?
Yes.
Okay.
I work for a church, and I'm considered, or the taxes I pay are self-employed.
Are you a pastor?
Yes.
Or a called worker? Okay. Then you're what we call a dual status employee, that you pay self-employment tax, but for benefits purposes, you're treated as an employee. Does your church have an insurance policy that covers you, or do you buy your own insurance and they reimburse you the cost?
It's a group insurance through the denomination.
Okay. So for those 2 months that you paid for it, did you pay for it out of your own money, or did you give the church money and the church continued your coverage?
It was for two quarters.
Okay.
And I took the money, paid the church, and then the church paid their
okay.
portion of the insurance.
If you gave the money to the church and right. the church had the right to do whatever they wanted to do with it,
right.
then it would be a charitable contribution.
Okay.
So it's if, again, you gave it with no strings attached, knowing that the church was in need of money, then it would be a charitable contribution.
Okay. Well, I was aware that the church needed money.
Okay. And if the church had chosen to use your money for something else and somebody else's money for the insurance premiums,
right.
then
right.
it is a no strings attached gift, which is a charitable contribution.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Angie in Chippewa Falls next. Hi, Angie.
Hello. My husband and I are thinking of selling our home in a couple of years. We built it 40 years ago, so we didn't buy it from anyone else. What kind of capital gains are we looking at?
It depends on the market. First of all, when you sell a house, if it is your principal residence, there is an exclusion of gain of up to $250,000 per person. So a married couple would be able to exclude $500,000 of gain, provided they don't change the law between now and the time you sell it. The gain is determined by looking at what you sold it for minus what you have invested in it. Over the 40 years that you built it, did you keep track of the money that you put into the house in building it?
Big things, yes.
Okay. That's where you start to determine that gain. Your collection of receipts or dollars that you invested in your house, that taken away from what you sell it for is the gain. And if you live in that house within 2 out of the last 5 years at the time you sell it, then unless your gain is more than $500,000, you're not going to have to worry about paying taxes on it.
Wonderful.
All right.
That answers it.
Thank you so much for calling, Angie. It's probably pretty good news from the sound of it. Annie and Brilliant, your turn. Hi, Annie.
Gift tax. I thought it was $15,000 now.
For 2018, it is $15,000.
Oh, thank you.
17, it was 14.
Yeah, there we go. And on to Jill and Racine. Hi, Jill.
Hello. My husband collects Social Security disability, and I work full-time and make in the high 90s. And my question is, we're getting killed on taxes because of this, because he doesn't have taxes taken out of the disability. Can I file married separate and his with him separate so that his disability isn't taxable?
You could file married separately. There is special rules for the floor for the taxability of disability on a married separate return, and it's less generous than it is on a joint return. That's one of the problems in filing married separate. The other problem is, as I mentioned earlier, this is the state of Wisconsin, and unless you have a premarital agreement, then all of your income goes together, and he gets half of your income, you get half of his disability income in figuring the taxes, and so you're probably not going to be any further ahead. My recommendation is that you have him change his Social Security to take some withholding out of it.
Okay. Not the answer I was hoping for, but thank you anyways.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary, where can we learn more about the specific changes coming up in 2018? For one thing, I guess talk to your tax professional.
There are a number of places. If you're in the internet world, if you go out to the internet and Google 2018 tax law changes, there are a number of services and places that have posted listings of some of the changes. If you really are into reading the tax law, there is the bill itself is posted out at the government website, and that is not so much fun to read because it's very much legalese. But there, you know, there are all kinds of articles that are being posted. IRS at this point has not gotten time to get any IRS publications out, to my knowledge. They're still trying to get caught up on things that affect 2017.
Well, Mary, it's always a pleasure. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today, and hope we have a chance to visit again soon. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Doesn't she do a great job? It's really quite a nice service. I'm pleased to have her with us. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll be giving you tips on organic vegetable gardening. Stay with us for that. And stay with us this afternoon. Lots in store.